Hello, this is Beatrice Pavia with part one of the Pantograph of Friday, August 21st, 2026. We begin with page one, where the main story is about McLean County Unit 5, titled First Day Like Disneyland. Retiring Principal Leads Festive North Point Welcome. This story is Dateline Bloomington. For 50 years, Matt Haar has gotten ready for the first day of school, first as a boy, then as a young adult pursuing a career in education, later as a teacher, and finally as principal of North Point Elementary School. "My mom was a school teacher," Haar said. "I still remember going to her classroom in August with her while she was setting up her classroom, so it's a little bit emotional when you think about doing something for that long." While he plans to retire at the end of this school year, Thursday was very much a day for beginnings for him after everyone else at North Point. On Thursday, thousands of McLean County Unit 5 students returned to the classroom for the first full day of school, an event Haar likened to opening the gates of Disneyland. This year, every North Point teacher was asked to have their picture taken wearing a pair of sunglasses with 26/27 painted on the lenses. Himanshi Gaur made a sign with a poem to make her 5-year-old son Avi's first day of school special. She said her son is looking forward to playing more and sharing his knowledge during the school year. "He knows way too much for his age," Gaur said. Jenny Keir said her 6-year-old son, Robin Wilson, got up early to start his first day of first grade and looks forward to physical education and other classes. "We're never early on any other day of the year," she said. She also expressed gratitude to North Point's annual supply kit fundraiser for providing her son with enough supplies for the new year. When the North Point staff gave away its supply kits on back to school night on Wednesday, Haar said he ran into one of his former students who was now taking his own son to North Point. "That's not the first time that's happened, so it's a pretty neat experience," Haar said. Haar, who is always on hand to high-five the incoming group of new students, reflected on the 2026-27 academic year being the last time he will get to experience this. "I have amazing teachers, and they take what they have and they make the best of it," Haar said. "And that's what I'm probably most proud of inside of our building, is our loving and caring culture." Haar began his career 24 years ago at Normal Community High School, which is when the campus moved to its current location at 3900 East Rab Road. After starting his career at the tail end of a historic capital investment, Haar said he's pleased to see Unit 5 taking on so many capital projects, some of which have greatly benefited North Point. "We had new carpet last year and new painting, which really spruced up our building," Haar said, "and we're getting a lot of work done on our roof." Haar would have his first administrative role at Kingsley Junior High School, occupying the former Normal Community High School building, and eventually settled at North Point as principal for the last 15 years. Haar's wife, Danelle Behrens Haar, also will be retiring as principal of Sheridan Elementary School in Bloomington District 87 at the end of the school year. "The number of kids and families that my wife and I both have had an opportunity to impact is pretty cool," he said. "I don't know that we've ever sat down and tried to figure that out, the actual analytics of that, but it's pretty neat." Although he is not sure what he'd like to do in his retirement, Haar said he hopes he can keep contributing to the district in some capacity. "I can't just sit at home and drink coffee," Haar said. Even though Haar will be leaving, North Point also welcomed new teachers for the 2026-27 year, including kindergarten and first grade teacher Molly Ratz. "I've had so much support and help from my fellow teachers and from Mr. Haar, and I'm so excited to meet all my new students," she said. Our next front page story is about storm cleanup, titled $17 Million in Hospital Damage Reviewed. Sorensen visits OSF after severe storms. This story is datelined Bloomington. OSF Healthcare St. Joseph Medical Center sustained about $17 million in damage in the August 13th severe storms, officials said Wednesday, during a visit by U.S. Representative Eric Sorensen. On top of the hundreds of damaged trees and thousands of power outages that were reported, the storms last week also caused significant damage to the medical center's roof. Outages also caused the temporary closure of OSF Medical Group Family Medicine. Derek Frazier, president of OSF Healthcare St. Joseph Medical Center, said the facility sustained about $17 million in damage and was left without 47 inpatient beds and 10 procedural beds. He added that an insurance adjuster will be on site this week to assess damage. However, Sorensen said even as the roof was peeling away, staff continued working through calf-deep water. They never ever took a break because they wanted to maintain the best level of care, he said. Joining Sorensen, Democrat of Moline, and Frazier on the tour were Bloomington Mayor Dan Brady and Illinois Representative Sharon Chung, Democrat of Bloomington. Now that Brady and the Bloomington City Council have approved an extended emergency declaration and Governor J.B. Pritzker has issued a state declaration of emergency, Sorensen said he will be working with the state and federal emergency management agencies to make sure the city can get additional support on the ground. Brady said more than 500 loads of brush have been picked up, and he anticipates around 2,000 loads will be collected over the next few weeks of cleanup efforts. Forestry crews from Champaign have been on hand to assist with cleanup. It's our responsibilities as elected leaders to make sure that we go forth with our friends in the federal Congress, our friends in the state legislature, and our friends here locally to make sure that we have these agencies that are supposed to be there to help, Brady said. To better respond to the next major storm, Sorensen proposed investing in the next generation of the Doppler radar because, unlike the tornado weather that occurred in April, last week's microburst storm is difficult to see on radar. Understanding that there were certain parts of this community that were hit harder than others, it's going to take more scientific investment, but we need to make sure that we can do that such that we don't have too many false alarms, Sorensen said. He added that the August 13th storms generated straight-line wind moving at 80 miles per hour, which is more than a weak tornado that would have prompted alarms. I think education is going to play a role in this too, Sorensen said, but there is a lot of social science to make sure that we are understanding what the risk is and then we are reacting to the risk in real time. And our last front page story is about the war in Ukraine, titled "Kyiv Seeks Missiles After Strike Kills 16. This is a Reuters story datelined Kyiv, Ukraine. A major Russian airstrike killed 16 people and injured more than 40 in Kyiv and the surrounding region on Thursday, as President Volodymyr Zelensky said a failure by Ukraine's allies to replenish its stock of air defense missiles was costing lives. Ukraine's Air Force said Russia launched dozens of cruise missiles as well as ballistic and hypersonic ones and 168 drones in the massive overnight attack. The Air Force said almost 90% of the drones and most of the cruise missiles were downed. It did not specify how many ballistic missiles were launched and whether any were intercepted. Zelensky called Thursday's strike one of the most cynical, calculated, and large-scale of the four-and-a-half-year-long war. The upper floors of a nine-story residential block were destroyed in Kyiv's Solomianski district, Mayor Vitaly Klitschko said. He called for Friday to be observed as a day of mourning. Overall, 30 residential buildings, a school, a children's hospital, and a kindergarten were damaged in the capital and the surrounding areas, Zelensky said. Private energy company DTEK said it restored power to about 90,000 households that lost the supply after the attack. The Russian Defense Ministry said Moscow attacked Kyiv and the surrounding region with airstrikes and drones, hitting facilities producing drone components, a military depot, and a logistics hub, as well as other targets. The Russian strikes also targeted a border crossing with Moldova in the Black Sea region of Odessa, where repeated attacks on ports and ships have brought Ukraine's vital agricultural exports to a virtual halt in recent weeks, pressuring global food prices. As Russia has escalated its ballistic strikes in recent months, Zelensky has pleaded with allies to replenish Ukraine's stock of Patriot interceptors, the only weapon in its arsenal capable of downing a ballistic missile. The interceptors for Patriot systems have not yet been replaced, and they are needed every day, Zelensky said on the Telegram app. Each additional missile saves the lives of our people. Moscow, he said, would not seriously negotiate for peace as long as Ukraine had no missile defenses to defend its cities. U.S.-mediated talks to end the war stalled this year as Kyiv refused to yield to Russian demands to cede more territory. Unfortunately, the world's response to such attacks is not always adequate, Zelensky said. EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen said on social media, in response to Zelensky's message, that she was working with member states and partners to provide Ukraine with anti-ballistic capabilities as the most urgent of priorities. Ukrainian Prime Minister Sergei Koretsky said some food warehouses and the facilities of the Red Cross around Kyiv were damaged in the attack, which lasted almost 9 hours. In recent weeks, fresh fruit and vegetables occasionally disappeared from the shelves in some supermarkets in Kyiv as a result of strikes on logistics depots of food retailers. At the missile-damaged apartment block in Solomyansky district, an elderly woman wailed as rescuers carried out the body of her grandson, Reuters TV showed. She stood sobbing beside the body after he was placed on the ground before medics moved in to support her. While most of the dead were in the Ukrainian capital, one person was also killed in the surrounding region, an official said on Telegram. Ukraine has also increased its attacks on Russia, targeting oil facilities and logistics infrastructure to try to undermine Moscow's ability to wage war. Overnight, authorities in Russia's Tatarstan region, 620 miles east of Moscow, reported a disruption at an industrial complex in the city of Nizhnekamsk following a Ukrainian drone attack, adding that some residential apartments were also damaged. Ukraine's military said it hit the Tanico oil refinery and an oil terminal in the Krasnodar region. And we turn now to some local and state news. This story is headlined, District 87 Promotes Goals, Dateline Bloomington. District 87 teased a new website and media campaign for the coming year that will highlight student success, district goals, and community impact. It's called D87 United, Wednesday night at the first school board meeting of this school year. Several board members wore purple and gold t-shirts with the phrase D87 United in support of the campaign centered around a list of vision and mission statements the board approved earlier this year. "We've put the vision into action," said Superintendent David Mouser. "It allows us to be able to all point in the same direction." The board approved a list of 5 goals at its April 2026 meeting, which can be seen online. That administrators distilled into 5 main themes in order of significance: achievement, belonging, culture, stewardship, and innovation. A lot of times when you strategic plan and you create goals, those are things that go on a shelf and you don't revisit. This is going to anchor everything we do, Mouser said. "Our community's going to know about it," he added. "We are going to expect our community to jump behind us and be a part of it too. Because truly, to be united is going to ultimately affect our students and give them a chance to be as successful as they can be. The district's main goal is student achievement, something that was reflected in a presentation of the final results from last school year, said Nicole Rummel, Assistant Superintendent of Teaching and Learning. The graduation rate at Bloomington High School increased year over year from 76.5% to 88%, she said. Standard test scores for grade school English, language, math, and science also increased across the district, she said, with science scores increasing 18% from the previous school year. Sarah E. Raymond School of Early Education even received special recognition from the state's Preschool for All grant program, Rummel said. Sarah Raymond, under that grant, gets monitored on a regular basis, and with their last monitoring this last school year, for the first time ever, they achieved gold status, she said. And this next story is headlined Unit 5 Eyes Budget and Rivian Taxes, Dateline Normal. McLean County Unit 5 is looking at a balanced $252 million spending plan for fiscal 2027, but future budgets may be complicated by a pending property tax assessment appeal by Rivian that could cost the district nearly $7 million. On Wednesday, the Unit 5 Board of Education heard a presentation on the district's fiscal 2027 spending plan by Chief Financial Officer Marty Hickman. The budget proposed for the fiscal year that started July 1, 2026, represents an increase from the $244.7 million budget presented a year ago. Projected revenue across all funds is $256.4 million. Property tax revenue for the district is projected to increase by 9.3%, or roughly $13.6 million, over fiscal 2026, based on a 7.3% increase in the district's tax base value in the 2025 tax year and a projected 4.5% valuation increase in the 2026 tax year. Rivian, however, appealed its property assessment for the 2025 tax year, which could affect this overall number. Tax years are the same as calendar years for property tax levies. A spokesperson for Rivian did not respond immediately to a request for comment on Wednesday. Although the local appeal board upheld the township assessor's valuation, Rivian's case is before the Illinois Property Tax Appeal Board. If the state agrees with Rivian's valuation, Hickman said the district could lose about $6.8 million in property tax revenue in the worst case. The money would then be paid back to Rivian with future tax proceeds, he added. Unit 5 Superintendent Kristen Weichel said that because of the backlog of cases, a ruling might not be made until next year. It's a situation where we kind of have to prepare for the worst and hope for the best, Weichel said. Hickman also estimated that the district will receive about $14.6 million from the 1% county facility sales tax in fiscal 2027. About $10.3 million of this revenue will go toward capital projects. $2.8 million will go toward tax abatements on Unit 5's existing debt. $1.5 million will go towards school resource officers, psychologists, social workers, and counselors. Assuming all district positions are to be filled for the entire year, salaries are expected to increase by 5.7%, or roughly $6.8 million. That, of course, includes salary increases for existing staff, but we have also added some positions for this school year as well, Hickman said. Benefits will also increase by 11.3%, or roughly $3 million, due to increases to the teacher's retirement system and board-paid health insurance. Like previous years, Unit 5 is not expected to be fully funded by the state for transportation services. Last year, the district received roughly 79% of what it was owed for regular transportation services, and 69% of what it was owed for special education transportation services. This year, Hickman estimated that Unit 5 would receive 73% of regular transportation costs and 52% of special education transportation costs. To compensate for this shortage, about $6 million in working cash reserves will be transferred to the transportation fund to balance the budget. The district's operations and maintenance fund is projected to have a roughly $203,000 surplus, and the tort fund, meanwhile, is estimated to have a roughly $755,000 deficit. And this story is headlined, Local Hideout Back at Eric's 2, Dateline Bloomington. The local hideout bar and grill announced it will be moving locations, but is here to stay in Bloomington despite initially closing earlier this month. The business, owned by Jasmine Wickman and managed by Noah Nelson, originally opened on May 18th at 2401 East Oakland Avenue in the former Crave Hot Dogs and Barbecue restaurant. Nelson said they decided to close their doors on August 3rd due to issues with the location, and they apologized to customers for the short notice as they went dark on social media. The building had a lot of leaks in the roof and some problems that kept us from being able to do more with it, like not having a hood so we couldn't have a grill or big fryers, Nelson explained. We were just limited to so much. Space was limited inside and out for parking, so we had a lot of complaints about not being able to park. Also, people did not like that we were connected to the gas station. Nelson formerly ran Route 66 Roadhouse and Pizzas by Marshalloni in Pontiac, but is now partnering with another local business to still bring their menu items to the community. Eric's 2 Family Restaurant and Lounge at 921 Maple Hill Road in Bloomington will now essentially be home to the hideout, but will still go by Eric's, and Eric Trujillo will continue to operate as the owner. It will be approximately 14 minutes away from Hideout's original location. I've known Eric for a while. I've been talking with him about working for him to make his place better, as he is a busy person and can't put all of his time in there, Nelson said. Jasmine and I will be working for him, basically redoing his menu our way while keeping some of his items as well. The Hideout was known for serving loaded brats sourced from Bloomington Meats, as well as paninis. Nelson said he plans to add some items that he previously offered at the Roadhouse, such as the bread and butter fried pickles, onion rings, and skillet macs. They also want to add burgers and other items to the menu. We want to make it a great menu of things you don't see in the Bloomington area, he said. We're still working on all of the details food-wise, but we will be helping revamp Eric's to try to bring new life to it, as Eric is a great guy and has a great place that has so much potential. Alcohol and gaming will continue to be offered at the location, too. The new location will also have a bigger space, bigger kitchen, more parking, a full bar with taps, more menu items, and more room overall for customers to enjoy themselves. Eric's also has an outdoor beer garden with umbrella coverings. On Facebook, Nelson said it will still go along with their original intent behind naming the business, as they will still be tucked away between hotels and businesses. We're still hiding out. The hideout isn't going anywhere. We're just hiding somewhere new, Nelson wrote on Facebook. Trujillo has owned and operated his restaurant on Maple Street for 7 years, but previously had a location near Miller Park. Trujillo said his chimichangas, the Eric's burrito, and other favorites will continue to be on the menu, along with new items from the hideout. The new menu rolled out on Wednesday, featuring various appetizers, wraps, burgers, sandwiches, pasta, sides, and drinks, a Taste of Mexico menu, as well as breakfast and dinner menus. All of the Hideout's homemade dips and sauces will remain on the menu, as well as the sweet potato tots, loaded sweet tots, fried green beans, wings and wing sauces, salads, and fries. Weekly specials include 10% off burgers on Monday, 10% off wraps on Tuesday, 50% off appetizers with the purchase of a meal on Wednesday, half off dessert with a meal purchase on Thursday, and all-you-can-eat fish and fries on Friday. We were just discussing how to make the restaurant bigger, you know, and more profitable. And he is a young talent, and I've been around the block for a while already, Trujillo explained of their partnership. He really has a lot to offer. He is a person that is really devoted to what he's doing. So it's like I'm giving him a chance, and you know, if he can just come over and make it go, he can support his family, and I can support mine. He said they're going to learn each other's respective menus and hope to attract customers from both sides. The restaurant will be open from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. daily. Trujillo also wants people to know they are near other businesses, such as Rivian, and hopes employees will stop by and try out the food. They also offer private parties. It makes me really excited. I'm giving a young blood a chance so that he can prove himself. A lot of people would ask me, and I would always tell people no and put up your own restaurant. And now I'm at the place where I'm like, let's try it out. And this story is headlined Salvation Army Plans Block Party, Dateline Bloomington. The Bloomington Salvation Army will host a neighborhood block party this weekend. The event will take place from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday, August 22nd, at 611 West Washington Street in Bloomington. Free lunch will be available from 11 a.m. to 1:30. The event will also feature a bounce house, face painting, games, music, and door prizes. Several community partners will also be in attendance, including the Bloomington Public Library, Bloomington Police Department, State Farm, McLean County Health Department, Chestnut Health Systems, Family Community Resource Center, Goodwill Career Services, OSF On Call, Pathway of Hope, and the Salvation Army Youth Programs. And Hayloft Shop sets Arts and Craft Fair, Dateline Mossville. The Hayloft Shops will host their 44th annual Art and Craft Fair next month in Mossville. The shops are celebrating 56 years in the village of Mossville and America 250. The event will be held rain or shine, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Friday, September 11th, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., Saturday, September 12th, and noon to 4, Sunday, September 13th. The event will feature colonial reenactors, period craft demonstrations, and demonstrations by craftsmen and artists on the fair lawn all 3 days. This will include spinning, felted art, scissor sharpening, quilting, rugs, painting, jewelry making, crochet, sewn crafts, and more. There will also be special guests from the Sons and Daughters of the American Revolution. The fair aims to be educational and teach various forms of American art. There will be folk music as well as the Fireman's Pancake Breakfast at the station and a bake sale at the Hayloft on Saturday. Various discounts will be offered at the shops, including all gift, gourmet, dress, and antique items, with 20% off. And this has been Beatrice Pavia with part one of the Panagraph of Friday, August 21st, 2026. I look forward to reading part two with you next.